Well, the eagle-eyed amongst you have probably seen or noticed that there are two presents sitting at the front of church. So there's this rather beautiful gold one and a rather beaten-up box. Now, if these were sitting... if these were sitting under your Christmas tree, I wonder which one you would choose. I know which one I would actually choose. I would choose this rather beautifully wrapped gold one above the rather beat up, broken down box. Now, if we have a look inside the gold one, let's see what's actually inside this box this morning. See if we've made the right kind of choice. Oh dear. It's a bit of a disappointment. What about in this rather beaten... now this is more interesting. This is better. This is a bit of a surprise. A new phone. Well, you see, you can't always judge from the outside how important what is on the inside. William Shakespeare famously wrote in The Merchant of Venice that all that glitters is not gold. Not everything that is shiny and superficially attractive is valuable. Hold that thought, because we'll come back to it. COVID has led to some imaginative adaptations of the traditional school nativity. I don't know if you've been following any of those. Grasmere Primary School in the Lake District, they filmed an outside version of the nativity story in which Mary and Joseph are driven into the hills, not by the murderous Herod, but by a pandemic. And Bramley Park Primary School in Leeds, they had the angel Gabriel Zoom calling Mary, they had the shepherds furloughed, and the wise men bringing sanitizer and a gold face mask. Adapting or adding to the biblical narrative, that's nothing new. And it's quite surprising, isn't it, what actually turns up in a modern nativity story. The film Love Actually contains not just one, but two lobsters, an octopus, and a Spider-Man, all in the school nativity. And other additions that I've come across include a Christmas pudding, a barn door, the sugar plum fairy, and a piece of straw. Can you imagine the conversation at home? Mummy, guess what I'm going to be in this year's nativity play? Yes, darling, what are you going to be? I'm going to be a piece of straw. Ooh, that's exciting. Even for those of us who know the biblical account of Christ's birth, can forget that the Bible actually makes no mention as to how many magi or wise men there were. There are no camels, there is no cow, donkey, innkeeper, and even the stable is a bit of an assumption. Of course, many of these things, they are reasonable assumptions, aren't they? Because the magi, they had to ride on something. They'd come a long way. So they had to journey on something. And camels were the first century equivalent of our MPVs. But we don't need to worry, because in removing many of the things that we add to the Christmas story, we're not left with less. Rather, I would suggest we're left with more, because nothing can change or take away from the central, underlying, glorious, life-changing truth that here lies the one who is Emmanuel, God with us, God in flesh, God living and breathing. And that is enough. That is more than enough, for that is all we need to make Christmas worth celebrating. So many things have been stripped back from Christmas this year, haven't they? Singing carols, which we love to do, and gathering with friends and family as we'd like to. But the essential stripped back truth has not changed. In fact, it's more powerful than ever. Like a beautiful and timeless piece of music which is stripped back to the underlying melody, it's made all the more perfect and powerful by its simplicity. And whilst that first nativity, it may not have had camels or innkeepers or a stable, one of the key elements which remains is the manger. Mark showed a picture of it before. That is one of the things, that's one of the core things in the biblical accounts. Luke mentions it three times, in verses 7, in verses 12, and verses 16. And this is no accident. This is quite deliberate, because the manger is a key sign. It's a bit like those spy movies, you know, where somebody wears a red rose or a rolled up newspaper under their arm to kind of identify themselves to others as to who they are. The manger is the sign that the shepherds have found what they are looking for. That tells them that this is the right baby. Today in the city of David, says the angel, a saviour has been born for you. He is Christ the Lord, and this will be a sign for you. You will find a baby wrapped in swaddling cloths and lying in a manger. And whilst, like our battered old present, the manger may not look very impressive, it contains treasure. It contains real, priceless treasure. Nothing on the outside tells you that something important lies within. Yet here lies the one that the prophets proclaimed as wonderful counselor, Prince of Peace, and Mighty God. Here lies the one who has come to share our humanity and transform it from within, defeating the power of death to hold us. So the manger is a signpost. It's a pointing finger, if you like, to the treasure lying within. A signpost for the shepherds and a signpost for us. Throughout history, the cots and cradles of the rich and powerful have been really ornate and elaborate affairs. Queen Victoria's first child, she slept in a cradle that was shaped like a shell. This was apparently to symbolise the naval domination of the British Empire at the time. And the cot swung between mahogany pillars supported by four gilded lion's feet. And above it, it had a canopy. And on top of this canopy, there was a crown. And the padded interior was embroidered with the white rose of England. The Emperor Napoleon's son and heir, he had a cradle which was as magnificent as a throne. It stood on a platform under a canopy, and at the head there was a gilded angel holding a double crown of stars and laurels. And at the foot of this cradle that the baby would gaze at was a golden eagle. And these magnificent cradles, they boldly point to the importance, they're meant to point to the importance of the one who is lying within. They shout, don't they? They shout power. They shout wealth. They shout prestige. And likewise, the cradle, the manger which held Jesus shouts, well, it speaks quietly to those open to its message. Because just as those royal cradles tell us something about the one who lay within, so the manger tells us about the kind of king that Jesus is. Because Jesus has a different kind of kingship. Jesus is a king who will rule not through military might or economic power, but rather through sacrificial, self-giving love. The manger speaks of one who renounces the glory of heaven to embrace and transform our broken humanity. Here in this rough-hewn feeding trough lies not just a king, but the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords. As we once again come before the manger this morning, gathering together here in church and watching online, how should we respond? Well, if you're here, you're listening this morning, and you wouldn't call yourself a follower of Jesus yet, I'd encourage you to find out more about the one lying in the manger. And a perfect way to do that is coming up in January, when we're going to be having an online Alpha course. And Alpha is a brilliant way to find out more about who Jesus is and what it means to follow him. And you can find out more about our Alpha course on the website or by contacting the church office. That would be a really good way to respond to the one lying in the manger whose birth we celebrate today. In addition, let me just draw out briefly three ways as I close as how we might respond to the child in the manger from our passage. Firstly, we tell others. The shepherds do not keep the news, the good news of the birth in Bethlehem, to themselves. We read that after they'd seen the child, they spread the message that they'd received about him, and all who heard it were amazed at what the shepherds said to them. Let's do the same. Let's not bottle up or keep to ourselves the truth about the treasure that lies in the manger. By words and actions, let us, like the shepherds, share that good news with our families and our friends, our neighbours and our colleagues. Let's do it by the way we celebrate Christmas over these coming days. Different as these celebrations might be, stripped as they are of many of the usual trappings, Christmas this year may feel more like the battered old box than a sparkly present, but let's not forget the treasure that lies within. Secondly, like Mary, we ponder. We ponder not just today, but every day. We read that Mary pondered and treasured these things. So we need to ponder, to treasure, to contemplate, to meditate on this amazing truth. We need to live out of the wonder of God coming to us in the person of Jesus Christ that first Christmas. One of the Goodhue family's yearly traditions is to watch the Muppet Christmas Carol on Christmas Eve. And for all the cute puppets and the corny jokes and the cheesy songs, it's a really faithful adaptation of Charles Dickens' wonderful story. And in it, a transformed Scrooge says, "I will honour Christmas and try to keep it all year. I will honour Christmas and try to keep it all year." So let us, with Mary and Scrooge, ponder and treasure and honour the wonder that we discover in the manger at Christmas, allowing it to fill our hearts and lives with love and hope and joy each and every day of the coming year. And thirdly and finally, we worship. In verse 20, we read that the shepherds returned, glorifying and praising God for all they had heard and seen, which was just as the angel had told them. When we stand before the manger and we consider the one who lies within, the only right response is worship. It is what we were made for. So as the carol says, O come, let us adore him. O come, let us adore him. O come, let us adore him, Christ the Lord.